Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 35 of the SmackDown Wind Down, recapping the highs and lows from Friday Night SmackDown on Fox. I am your host and humble guide, Keela Cash. Thank you so much for joining me as week 35 of WrestleSubtopia comes to a close. Happy Saturday morning, afternoon, and evening to you all as another busy week in the worlds of WWE and AEW winds down. But this is not the end. It's only the beginning, as tomorrow night we have Clash of Champions Gold Rush airing live at 7 o'clock EST on the WWE Network, along with the pre-show airing at 6 Eastern on the network and on YouTube and WWE social media channels for free to give you a sneak peek into tomorrow's pay-per-view. And it promises to be an interesting show with a couple of matches I'm really looking forward to in particular, and it all comes from the SmackDown side of the card. No surprise, since Roman Reigns has declared SmackDown the filet mignon of WWE, while Raw is a big fat cheeseburger, and that is very true as of late. And I will go into the issues regarding the booking of challengers heading into tomorrow night's pay-per-view, that many of them are weak, with a few exceptions. And how can you invest when the opponents have already been beaten down 48 hours before the pay-per-view, and you can wind the clock back several weeks earlier to that to see them get beat down on a regular basis to somehow justify a title shot on the pay-per-view as well? So in terms of booking strong challengers, this has been a very weak spot for WWE creative. But when it comes to telling a couple of really strong main event stories, they have knocked it out of the park. And let me tell you, the last 15 minutes of this episode of SmackDown was pure perfection. And I only wish the first hour and a half was just as strong, despite some good wrestling that aired on last night's show. But it's very hard to connect emotionally when someone you know that shouldn't get beat down 2 days before a title shot gets, guess what, beat down. So that was one downside to the show from last night, which I will get into shortly. But first and foremost, I do want to offer an update on the COVID-19 outbreak hitting not only WWE, but AEW, CMLL, and several independent wrestlers who have worked for AEW in recent weeks as well. On the WWE side of things, they did release a statement yesterday saying they completed a second round of COVID tests. They're not going to reveal any positive results or release names due to HIPAA laws, which is completely understandable. But for the NXT side, if they were in contact with anyone with the virus, they are self-quarantining for 14 days. The PC training classes have been canceled, and that's why we had the Super Skeleton Crew on NXT this past Wednesday. So if it looked a little dystopian-ish, that's why. And if everyone that you know that should be on NXT wasn't, let's not panic just yet, because WWE does do a great level of contract tracing. So if you was in contact with anyone that had COVID-19, you are quarantining for 2 weeks. So you cannot be on the show. You can't be a part of the audience. You can't even be backstage lollygagging. You got to go home. So what we saw, especially with that convoluted tag team match with Roderick Strong teaming up with Danny Burch and Raul Mendoza teaming up with Fabian Aichner, that is why that probably went down the way it did, due to limited availability of talent. And hopefully everyone gets well very soon and stays safe. And the same goes for AEW as well. They're doing additional testing when it comes to people being tested at home before traveling to Jacksonville for the tapings at Daly's Place. And if they pass that second round of tests, they will be cleared to enter the building and participate in the program, whether in the ring or as a spectator in the crowd. So AEW is doing all the right things in that regard. And as I mentioned on Thursday's episode of the Potpourri Mashup, that AEW has a direct line with the NFL and the Jacksonville Jaguars, and they have access to the coronavirus protocol to make sure they clamp down on how they test and how stringent the testing is. So I give them credit for that. I do want to acknowledge a lot of chatter on social media from some fans that have this tribalism mentality of it has to be AEW versus WWE, and the sloppy shop line that Taz dropped a few months ago on Dynamite. We have to stop. I have been very harsh to WWE when it came to the COVID outbreak a few months ago at the PC that resulted in about 40 people getting sick and having skeleton crews, especially on the SmackDown side of things, for well over a month. And AEW has been testing since this outbreak has begun, and we have to give them credit for that. But WWE has been testing every single taping, whether they were doing tapings in bunches or since they moved to the Thunderdome at the Amway Center in Orlando, Florida. Both companies are conducting tests on a regular basis to ensure the safety of their talent. If someone tests positive, it happens. Outbreaks will occur, but that does not mean a company is running a sloppy shop when they are conducting tests. If there were no tests being conducted, then yes, you are running a sloppy shop. But outbreaks will happen in these promotions when people get lax, when they should be smart about what they do on their spare time. Socializing at what cost? Not masking up at what cost? It is the cost of their well-being and the well-being of the people they interact with at the workplace. That is what I am referring to. So the companies are doing their jobs now, which is a good thing. We've seen outbreaks in Major League Baseball, and it has been tampered down in recent weeks. The NBA is in a bubble, and there's been zero infections in the bubble thus far, and that is amazing. The NHL as well, the Stanley Cup playoffs have gone off without a hitch, and we're in the final right now. And they are in a bubble as well. Wrestling, you're in the bubble of Florida, which is a hot spot, once again. And these things, unfortunately, will happen when certain people are not being smart about the situation. That is the genesis of this issue. If there were zero testing going on and an outbreak broke loose, then yes, everyone would be deemed a sloppy shop. But when two companies are trying their damnedest to clamp down on positive test results and are actually contact tracing and pulling people off the show for precautionary reasons, then they're not running sloppy shops. We should not be rooting for COVID at this point. That's stupid. But I will say it is a person's responsibility, if you're coming to a place of business, to be aware of what you're doing and how you're conducting your business outside of the ring. The NFL, by some miracle, zero positive test results. College football is more sticky, but those outbreaks do happen, but it is not because those college football teams are running a sloppy shop. It is a matter of irresponsibility on college campuses when you should know better. And sadly, in some cases, people are doing all the right things, but people that you do interact with that don't know they're infected infects you and your family in close proximity. And that is something that goes beyond your control. And that is a rare case of saying you did nothing wrong in the moment. But if a wrestler or wrestlers are actively going out doing dumb shit, yes, an outbreak will happen. Don't throw parties during a pandemic. Don't do that. Don't willfully be an idiot. And that is the message of the day to the performers out there. We really admire you and appreciate the entertainment you provide, but please be mindful of your surroundings. Please be mindful of the consequences of going spring break 98, because it's not a good look. And I thought we learned that lesson earlier this summer with WWE, and apparently the lesson has repeated itself once again. Be smarter. And for AEW, if your talent is running indie shows, you might want to ask those promotions to do stringent COVID testing so they're not as lax and they're not as lackadaisical when it comes to the spread of this virus, because you don't want a super spreader event occurring and it brings it right back to your home base at Daly's Place. And that goes for running concerts in certain areas as well. Don't be an enabler in that situation. So no one at the end of this day, as of right now, is running a sloppy shop when you're conducting tests on the regular. And I hope some fans that think that way can stop, because that's not cool. Yes, one line is synonymous with WWE, but when they're trying to do the right thing now, it is a moot point. And if something happens in AEW, it's not a sloppy shop. They're running tests as well. And ultimately, what we should be doing is wishing the very best for anyone that is infected with the virus and who is quarantining to hope they don't get it. That is where our thoughts should be at. The well-being of the performers who do so much for us on a weekly basis to get us through the year from hell. And they're working through it. Tape settings, live settings, any which way you want it, they're doing it. They're providing content nonstop since the pandemic started. And we can't say that for a lot of sports leagues that did shut down for good reason. But wrestling companies are beholden to contracts from networks that will yank you if you do not produce live content. And AEW is in a stickier situation versus WWE. who have protection from USA and Fox, who had to really think about, do we want to really put that on them every single week? Is it really a necessity to go live? And some companies don't have that luxury unless you are owned outright by the media company, like a Ring of Honor or an Impact Wrestling. AEW is beholden to Warner Media. And yes, it's a great partnership, but in that contract, I bet it says you have to do a live show every other week at the minimum to keep the money flowing, to pay for everyone's salary, which outweighs any sloppy shop talk at this stage in the game. So I was really irritated by that, and I hope to stop seeing it on my timeline. And my only critique for WWE and AEW is I want to see a weekly COVID testing report detailing the positivity rate in your companies. I don't need names, but it will offer reassurance into how you are conducting business to ensure the safety of your talent and to make sure we as fans don't become worry warts when we don't see certain people. And if we don't see them, then we know there's a reason for that. So that will offer clarity for everyone without violating HIPAA law. So that would be great on both companies' parts to really be transparent. The more transparent you are, the less reporters have to dig for outside sources to get to the truth of the matter when it should be plain as day in black and white. And on that note, it's time to discuss last night's episode of Friday Night SmackDown on Fox, the go-home show for Clash of Champions Gold Rush this Sunday on the WWE Network. And it emanated per the usual from the Thunderdome at the Amway Center in Orlando, Florida. And we kick things off with the Ascension Ceremony for the WWE Intercontinental Championships as they will be hoisted high above the ring. And the winner will grab both title belts and become the undisputed IC champion. So we had Sami Zayn, who holds belt number one, Jeff Hardy, who holds belt number two, and AJ Styles, who wants both belts, out there throwing shade. AJ saying that Jeff Hardy's a cheater because he used a knee brace illegally to knock him out to win the title a few weeks ago on SmackDown. He accused Sami Zayn of taking a six-month vacation, so he's not a real champion. Sami says, well, AJ, you're dishonorable because you participated in a fraudulent tournament knowing I was still the rightful champion. And Jeff Hardy, when you won this tournament, you could have called me and said, hey, man, I have to give it to you. You are the true IC champion, and I should not have this title. I shall relinquish it to you. And he was mad at everyone for not respecting his title reign. Eventually, Corey Graves got things under control as he had the titles being lifted high above the ring. And during the ceremony, Sami Zayn slammed a ladder into both AJ Styles and Jeff Hardy. And Adam Pearce, who is now the de facto general manager of both Raw and SmackDown, comes out and says, hey, Sammy, because of what you did, AJ's added to your match against Jeff Hardy, and it's now a triple threat match, which took place after the commercial break. And I wondered to myself, why? Because we're getting this match via a ladder match for the IC titles this Sunday at Clash of Champions. Why would you spoil this moment 48 hours in advance? Now, granted, the work was really good. I thought all three men had a really nice showing, and I was happy with the outcome as AJ Styles hit Jeff Hardy with the phenomenal forearm after Sami Zayn ducked out of the way and Sami threw AJ out of the ring, and he pinned Jeff Hardy to win the match to gain a level of momentum heading into Sunday's pay-per-view, where no pinfalls will be counted, no submissions will be allowed, as you have to climb the ladder, grab the titles, and you are the undisputed Intercontinental Champion. After the match was over, AJ Styles was pissed off. He grabbed a ladder from the outside and hit Sami Zayn and Jeff Hardy with it before grabbing a big ladder on the outside and climbing the rungs to grab the title belts to symbolically declare himself the winner heading into Sunday's pay-per-view. And I think this will be a sneaky great match on Sunday. Three seasoned vets out there tearing it up. Jeff Hardy is a ladder match specialist. AJ Styles can more than hold his own, and Sami Zayn is well versed in the ladder match as well. And it's good to see Sami out there taking bumps and really working hard, because I know those shoulder surgeries took something out of him the last couple of years, and to see him back in his element and being a difference maker in the ring is a beautiful thing to see. Hopefully he will safely show up and show out on Sunday in this ladder match. And if you check out the prediction show that's now playing on this very podcast feed, whenever you finish with this episode, me and extra special guest co-host Scott Tinsley did predict every match on the COC card, and it was a good show with several laughs had by all. So that was a nice cheap plug, Hiya Mick Foley, to get you into the mood for COC tomorrow night, but getting ready for a sneak preview ahead of schedule that you can play between now and tomorrow at your leisure. Next up was Cesaro accompanying Shinsuke Nakamura down to the ring to face Grand Metalik as Lince Dorado and Kalisto cheered him on from ringside. And this was a fine match, but I'm having the same issue with me seeing a preview of a match 48 hours ahead of schedule. Shinsuke Nakamura and Grand Metalik worked well together. There were some great spots. Metalik always gets to shine by doing the beautiful arm drags via the top rope, a rope walker extraordinaire, doing a senton on the ropes, doing a flip dive on the outside, really taking it to Nakamura until Nakamura hit him with an exploded suplex, followed by the Kinshasa for the win. And emotionally, coming into Sunday's pay-per-view for the SmackDown Tag Team titles, why should I care about Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura defending those belts against the Lucha House Party? Really, why should I care? They're two really good tag teams. I think Lucha House Party are highly underrated, and I do enjoy the fact that Kalisto is stirring shit up after his boys got attacked and he was low to help and Lince Dorado pushed him down, and that does forward tension, which is nice, but it lacks credibility when they're not able to secure wins heading into a major pay-per-view on Sunday and they're supposed to be viewed as legit challengers. It's hard to take the match seriously when they've been beaten down repeatedly in singles matches and the only win they got was via a Street Profits distraction backstage via the big screen a few weeks ago. So it should be a good match on Sunday, but if you find it hard to emotionally invest due to how Lucha House Party are booked, then that's completely understandable because I'm in the exact same boat. I'm driven by emotion. I'm driven by that connection. And right now, despite the talent, I don't care about this match because one team has been beaten down repeatedly with one fluke win to show for it. And that is a shame considering how good this match could be with proper booking and storyline support. Next up was Bayley sitting down telling us that she has better things to do than to worry about Sasha Banks, someone she beat down a few weeks ago on SmackDown, and she focused on Nikki Cross. And Nikki made it a point last week to mention that she does not have to worry about Sasha Banks in Bayley's corner. And Bayley made the astute point of, hey, Nikki, you know why Sasha Banks isn't in my corner? Because I took her out. She's useless to me. So what do you think I'm going to do to you on Sunday? Because you're just as useless, if not more so. And she grabbed the chair and says, this is going to be your future. And I loved it. Bayley is a great heel. I think the WWE crowd sweetener technician took things a bit too far because the boos were especially loud for Bayley, a little bit too much for it to be completely believable, but she did get proper heat for this segment despite how fake those boos came off in the moment because it really drowned her out in a lot of ways, and you don't want to overwhelm the speaker when they're trying to connect to the people at home and not so much the people on the screens partaking in the segment itself because they can only add so much via the thumbs down and the visual booing in the Thunderdome. But I thought Bayley did an excellent job once again. She's truly coming to her own. I expect a good match, but once again, when Bayley has beaten Nikki Cross repeatedly this summer, as a fan, why should you care emotionally? And I am in that same boat because we know the money matches Sasha Banks versus Bayley between now and the end of the year. And I have a funny suspicion it might be at Hell in a Cell next month, but we shall see about that. Next up was one of the best video packages you will see this year. It is a encapsulation of the Samoan dynasty of Roman Reigns and his father Sika, and you have Rikishi, the father of both Jay and Jimmy Uso, really hyping up this rivalry that is dated back to their childhoods. You see the archival footage and the photos and how both dads are riding for their sons heading into Sunday's pay-per-view, and Jimmy is there for his brother. I just love that history. I got goosebumps because it was rooted in realism and how Jey Uso became this out of nowhere number one contender. And to add this deep rooted level of emotion with family driving the storyline has been tremendous. He comes out to the ring and he wants to ask Roman the $1 million question. Why did you give me the look from last week? And we replayed the footage. They hugged it out. And when Jay turned his back, Roman gave him that scowl, the death stare that could burn through Jey Uso's soul. And people asked him, what about that stare? And he says, how can I see something that's happening behind my back? But now I see it. And I want to know why you gave me that look. And before he could continue, Paul Heyman says, well, you will get your answer on Roman Reigns' time. And here ended the segment, as we would get the answer at the end of the show. But I thought the video package really summarizing the Samoan dynasty between Roman Reigns and Jey Uso was tremendous. I thought Jey was great. And my God, was he amazing in the main event segment, which I would get into shortly. But next up was Matt Riddle versus King Corbin in a rematch from Payback last month. And this was better than what they did at the pay-per-view last month. It was more evenly matched, more aggression from Matt Riddle, which was nice to see. And Corbin kept up with him every step of the way. They traded great strikes, and it was really a fight, a brawl, nothing pretty about it. Matt Riddle nailed King Corbin with the final flash and went for another one until he got caught with a great deep six for a near fall. Corbin went for In a Daze, and Riddle floated out of that and hit him with another final flash before going for the floating bro. But Corbin got his knees up and hit the End of Daze to pin Matt Riddle. And that was that. The Matt Riddle experience on SmackDown has not been a swimming success thus far. And even Caleb Braxton got in the ring and said, hey, you lost, and what do you have to say about that, Matt? And Matt says losing sucks, but he will get past this and he will make SmackDown the bro show. Winning will make him stronger. And he left. He had this forlorn but contemplative look on his face, thinking to himself, I lost, but I'm going to get back on top. I'm going to get back on the winning track, and good for him. As for Baron Corbin, the sentiment is the same. I think that outside of the ring, he is fantastic. He's funny on Up, Up, Down, Down. He's a great chef. He's very funny. And in the ring, he can have really good matches. But unfortunately, he's saddled with a King gimmick that is completely lame at this point. And they should really do another King of the Ring tournament to really add some spice to the weekly television of Raw and SmackDown every Monday and Friday night. But most importantly, the main issue with Baron Corbin is that 2018 run of absolutely dreadful WWE programming that really sunk a ship for a long time, and they're still recovering to this day. So when you are the face of mediocrity in the face of failure, and you are just playing a role, but it's still representative of the effect he had by dominating the television shows as a wrestler and a general manager, driving story, beating up the baby faces, heat seeking missile, and it drove fans away. That's the wrong kind of heat. And I don't care what he has to say about it. It's not good heat when people are turning off the television. And I thought Paul Heyman handled him beautifully last year at King of the Ring, and then he went right back to SmackDown and dominated over Roman Reigns until the Royal Rumble this past January. So that is the problem, which is a shame, because I do like Baron Corbin when he's presented properly. And I thought on Monday Night Raw prior to the draft last year, he was finally being presented properly as a guy that does not have to dominate the main event scene, but can still be a quality heel in a good role with great workers. And when he can work, he works beautifully. But when he's overwhelming a feud, that's the problem. And that is the disconnection I have with the performer and not the man, because the man is great, but the performer and the things he's given to work with, that's the issue. And that needs to be corralled during the next draft by ditching this King gimmick that is now 1 year in its existence, and that's 1 year too long for all of us. And with that, it's now time to discuss Alexa Bliss versus Lacey Evans. And this was a slow, plodding match, and Alexa Bliss sold and sold and sold. But let me tell you something. When the laughter of the Fiend filled the Thunderdome, she switched. When the lights went red and that music hit, that eerie, ominous sound of the Fiend, Alexa Bliss flipped a switch. And she beat the shit out of Lacey Evans. She stumped her. The referee called for the bell for Alexa kicking too much ass. What a dumb ruling, but it happens in WWE from time to time. And if you notice Alexa Bliss's hair during the beginning of the segment, it was all pristine and little buns and tied up with the little dreadlocks for good measure. And then they came undone. It was a nest up there, but she sewed it beautifully. She continues to attack Lacey on the outside and she drops her with another very pretty Sister Abigail for good measure. And she is just gone when the lights go red. She looks demented, deranged, psychotic. Her body language, her scowl, her eyes, everything Alexa did was perfection. And then Roman Reigns' music hits and she walks down the aisle and she glances Roman Reigns up and down and she heads backstage. But before she does, she turns around. And if you thought the stare Roman Reigns gave Jey Uso last week was something, Alexa Bliss stared a hole through Roman Reigns. That was the shot of the night. She looked through him as if she was possessed by the fiend. It was gorgeous cinematography and outstanding method acting from Alexa Bliss. From her head to her toes, she felt that moment. Whatever this character is ultimately going to be, she's going to be fantastic at it. She is one of the best actresses this company has to offer. I saw it when she got drafted 4 years ago on SmackDown Live and she opened her mouth and started talking shit to Becky Lynch. And I was like, damn, I love Becky, but Alexa Bliss is coming through with the promos. And that's what drew me to her. Her performance as a character draws you in, and now she has something new to work with. Now that she has something fresh to sink her teeth into, and I think she's absolutely going to knock it out of the park. She did fantastic last night. The match was nothing but the aftermath. From the beatdown to Sister Abigail to the possession to her stare down with Roman Reigns was an 11 out of 10. And that is saying something. And what followed this segment was by far the best damn thing on the show, as we were finally on Roman Reigns' time, as Paul Heyman declared. And before Roman could speak, Jey Uso came out to confront his cousin. And Roman Reigns says this: "Let me explain something to you about the stare from last week. If I could give this Universal Championship to you, I would. But you're not strong enough to carry this on your shoulder, to carry the weight of supporting not only your family, not only my family, but the entire tribe of our family. I am the tribal chief of WWE. I am the one that sets the table for this family. I am the one who has to provide and fight and win at every opportunity, at every cost. And you, despite being a twin, you can't compensate for that. That does not make you half the man that I am, but that makes you one half of the greatest tag team champions of all time with your brother Jimmy. So you're no lesser than that, but you are not at this level to be Universal Champion. So enjoy the moment. You won't win, and it's all good. Let me do this for us. Don't worry about Sunday. I got this." And then he leaves. Jey Uso says, "What if you're wrong? Because you're not the only one with the family. I have a wife and children too. You don't think I deserve to be at the head of that table, being the champion? Because I get tired of hearing about the big dog. I get tired of hearing about Mr. WrestleMania. I'm tired of hearing about the guy that runs this place, about the man that runs the island, and this is his yard. Because when I'm with my brother and I have a WrestleMania moment, they don't know which one is Jey Uso. But I'm gonna let them know on Sunday that this is Jey Uso, and I am walking out with the Universal Championship, and you can believe that." And Jey's emotion, talking about his family, saying, "I should be the head of this table, not you. What makes you so special to be deemed the tribal chief? That could be me on Sunday." And I loved the emotion pouring out of Jey in that moment. You felt a light switch. And I noted that last week, that he did not feel comfortable prior to this night, that he felt as if the moment was too big for him, but deep down I knew it wasn't, because he's vastly improved as a speaker. And I always felt Jimmy was the better talker of the two, but he more than held his own last night. I wanted him to get out of his head and speak from the heart, and he did that last night. He walks up the ramp, he turns around, and he's greeted with a Superman punch. And let me tell you this, Roman Reigns got down on his knees, lifted up a prone Jey Uso by the head and yelled at him. And dare I say, this might have been the best promo Roman Reigns has ever cut in his life without a mic in his hand. He says, "I cannot let you take this from me. I am the head of this family. I put food on your table, my family's table, the whole family's table for that matter. You're not going to take this from me. On Sunday, you will show up, you will collect your paycheck, and you will get your ass whooped. And you're not taking this championship from me." Roman Reigns was fucking amazing. His hair was all over the place. It was just a streamline of emotions coming out of his body. And you could feel it. It was visceral. And that is what you call digging deep. Digging within your family to really sell this moment. I thought this promo was amazing. I thought this entire segment was fantastic. Jey Uso cut the promo of his career, and this is my most anticipated match heading into Sunday's pay-per-view. Yes, the outcome is academic, as water is wet and hell is hot, but it should be a great match. It will be a slaughter at some point when Roman whoops that ass accordingly, but it should be magnificent. I wrote this on Twitter, that SmackDown has become Pride Rock from the Lion King, and Roman Reigns is the fucking Lion King of SmackDown, and who is going to dethrone him from Pride Rock? This is the best Roman Reigns I have ever seen. I think this is something fans have been wanting for 5 years. And at this point, it was well worth the wait. Paul Heyman is great by being the perfect background accessory at this point. And Roman is doing this work tremendously well. And I'm proud of him. He is digging deep and selling the story as if it's the most important family matter in WWE history. And that is saying a lot. So kudos to both men for a job well done to sell the most anticipated match on a pay-per-view card that is lacking that must-see match that's going to get you on the edge of your seat. And Sunday, we have that in Roman Reigns versus Jey Uso for the Universal Championship. So a great way to end a pretty decent episode of SmackDown. It was not appallingly bad, like some aspects of last week's show, but this was a nice go-home segment to get you ready for Sunday's pay-per-view, at least on the SmackDown side of things. Roman Reigns, Bayley, Sasha Banks, Jey Uso are holding this glue together, and now Alexa Bliss is added to this equation for her doing great character work over the past few weeks. But we need more strength in the IC title picture, as I give honorable mentions to AJ Styles, Sami Zayn, and Jeff Hardy as well. But it's all about the future challengers, with the winner coming out of Sunday's match. Also for the tag team division is very soft, and as I continue to mention, they need to really consolidate those titles on Raw and SmackDown, and maybe throw NXT in the equation as well. The tag team divisions are soft, it's paper thin, and you need some depth, and the sooner you get it, the better, because right now, despite some challengers that look good on paper, the booking has been terrible to really water down the impact of Lucha House Party challenging Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro for those titles on Sunday at the Clash of Champions pay-per-view. But those are things that hopefully the draft will figure out. But at this point, when it's so shallow across all shows and all divisions, you might want to merge the brands and call it a day. But we shall see what WWE does about that in the weeks to come. And on that note, this wraps up episode number 35 of the SmackDown Wind Down, recapping the highs and lows from Friday Night SmackDown on Fox. I hope you enjoyed it as always. You can follow me on social media at Lady Wrestling X on Twitter and on Instagram at WrestleSubtopia. They can find me tweeting and gramming about these podcast shows that drop on the semi-daily, recapping Monday Night Raw, AEW Dynamite, NXT, and Friday Night SmackDown on Fox. Feel free to download past episodes on all of your favorite podcast directories, dating back to episode number 1 of The Raw Verdict, recapping the fallout from the 2020 Royal Rumble and everything in between for AEW, the pay-per-views, the takeovers, the WrestleMania that we will never forget, SummerSlam, Double or Nothing, All Out, Fighter Fest, The Great American Bash, every B-show from WWE this year. I got you covered in the archives. You know what to do. Subscribe by simply searching for Restless Subtopia on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, Buzzsprout, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn plus Amazon Alexa, and Spotify. I'll be back Monday morning with the Clash of Champions post-game show, recapping the highs and lows from Sunday's pay-per-view. Until then, enjoy your Saturday, your Sunday, and your manic Monday. Stay safe out there, and don't forget to wash those hands. See you later, boys and girls. Take care.